Welcome to Move Well to Live Well, a podcast where we discuss all things health and wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Belle Moody, a physical therapist specializing in pelvic health. This podcast is here for you to help educate, motivate, and elevate your life. Let's get into it. Hello and welcome to the Move Well to Live Well podcast. My name is Belle. I'll be your host. I have a very special guest with me today, my dear friend, Nikki. Nikki and I have known each other for a while. She's been a really, really long time member at the studio. Do you remember what year you started, Nikki?
So 2021.
Okay, yeah. So, long time, really dedicated member at the studio, and then she has given me permission to say this, HIPAA police out there, but she has been a patient of mine, and so I've been really just thankful to be a part of her journey that way from a health standpoint, and so we'll touch on that just a little bit today. But Nikki is going to, we're going to talk about things related to sobriety, exercise, and chronic pain, and I'm sure some other things along the way. So this is going to be a really great episode for anybody out there, because we've got, gosh, we're hitting on it all, aren't we, Nikki?
There's a lot.
Yes. So anyway, I first wanted to start by giving that kind of background for you and then asking you, I guess we'll just dive right into, from a sobriety standpoint, kind of where your journey started with that. So anything you feel like people would benefit from hearing, and then we can dive more into specifics as we go. But I know a lot of it, but I think just kind of where that journey started for you. Yeah. in your life.
Yeah. So I would say, first of all, as like a, you know, preface it with, I think that when you hear the word sober, you kind of assume that people were, you know, rock bottom, destitute, lost their jobs, sleeping on park benches. And yeah, the reality is just that's not where most people who are in active addiction live. Mm-hmm. A lot of us are high functioning. We're at work. You see us every day. And that's how I was. I was a daily drinker. I wasn't, you know, drinking to pass out every night, but I drank every day. And I started out like most people in my town. I live in a college town. There's not a lot to do outside of going to the bar. I think, yeah, I started mostly like those people, which is like going out, hanging out at bars, seeing friends. And then it kind of progressed, I would say, in two ways, like two big events. The first one, my mom died of breast cancer 6 years ago. And she also had addiction issues. Like, my mom was a very heavy drinker. She actually was the other side of the story, where like lost her job because of it. You know, she also had a lot of like mental health issues that I think contributed. I also think that her alcohol use was a huge factor in her recurrence of breast cancer. I think it was a leading cause of her death. So that was the first one, just, you know, kind of dealing with that grief.
Yeah.
And trying to like navigate it. She was in hospice for like 100 days. It was incredibly traumatic. It was just awful. Ugh. So kind of coming around after that, things, I would say that next year was pretty rough. A lot of whiskey flowing in that year.
Yeah.
Just to like numb the pain, honestly, just to get through the day. And then I would say it kind of tapered off a little bit, and I kind of, you know, fell back into like normal, just like whatever normal daily drinking is. And then the pandemic happened and we all went home. Mm-hmm. And we were just home all the time. And like that kind of just amped it up again. Mm-hmm. And I would say from there, it just kind of remained problematic for me. So, mm-hmm, I mean, it wasn't harming my marriage. It wasn't harming my job. It wasn't, you know, having these negative effects outside of anything other than it plagued me daily to know that I knew it was a problem. I knew that it was too much. And I knew that it had killed my mom, essentially. And yeah. I had a kid now. I had a small kid at this point. So it was like, I just kept thinking, like, I don't want him to see me go down like that. And I had tried, like, several, like, you know, Sober October, Dry January. I had done all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I started again in June of 2020. I did a little stint with a studio friend, actually. And then I kind of fell back into it again, as most people do. Like, it's hard around, like, 4th of July, holidays.
Oh, gosh, holidays. Oh, yeah.
Holidays are so hard.
Yeah.
And then I started again in October. I did 100 days that time. And then we had the ice storm. And it was like, we were trapped in our house for like a week and a half. And I broke then. And so that, it was kind of like one thing after another. And then I joined the studio in that April. I was doing an alcohol-free April. I had lots of clever names for whatever, lots of clever names for trying to mask the fact that I had a problem. So I joined the studio in April. I took a week off of work to clean my house, quit drinking, and join the studio. That was like my
goal. Wow.
And I made it all the way through April into May, broke down for 2 weeks. And then in June, I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
So June 1st, 2021, I set out to do a year, and I've been sober ever since. It's the best thing I've ever done for myself.
You've been sober for over 1,000 days,
well,
right?
Yes, over 1,000 days. Yes. Yeah, that was a really big deal. 1,000 days.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's a huge goal. Hitting four digits. I have like a little group of friends who are also sober with me, and two of them had already hit the 1,000-day mark by a lot. And we were all just so excited. Like, four digits feels like such a big thing. Because it is. It's a really huge. Big deal. I've gone birthdays, holidays, you know, lots of issues with my dad, and because, you know, he has his own health issues now. So yeah, it'll be 3 years in June, and I am so excited about it. It's the best thing. It's truly the best thing. Only good things have happened to me because of it. Like, I know that I can't say like I quit drinking and I got a better job, but I quit drinking and I had the mental bandwidth to work my tail off to acquire and keep a much better job that has changed the financial situation of my family, changed what we were able to do. Allowed me to have a second baby. So yeah, it's been, if I were still drinking, none of those things, but I would not have a daughter. I would not have the job I have now.
Wow.
I know that.
That is incredible. You know, you're the person that really brought it to my attention about the relation of alcohol and cancer. I know there was a study published, I think maybe this year. I can't remember if you sent it to me, or maybe we talked about it back and forth, but like, you know, in the past they had said that small amounts, especially related to like wine, could potentially have benefits for your heart health. But after that study that was released, now it is known that there is no amount of alcohol that contributes any type of health benefits at all.
Yeah. Like, in my journey to become sober, like the year leading up to me actually getting sober, I read so many books, And one of the best ones I read was Quit Like a Woman. And it really, really delved into that, like the health side of it, the fact that it has known like health problems that it causes, all of these things, particularly in women. And it does it for men too, no doubt, but it is very much a carcinogen.
Yes.
And it is a leading cause of women's, like of breast cancer in women. And one of the things that I was like shocked by was that like, anything you're, you, if you have more than three drinks a week, your risk of breast cancer is increased by 15%.
Holy cow.
And then I mean, that's an additional 5% for every drink after the first three.
Wow.
That's a huge number.
Yeah.
And I already have an increased risk. My mom got cancer the first time at 42. She died of it, you know, another 15, 20 years later. So like I already have an increased risk. Like by the time I quit, I was like, I mean, do I have cancer? I don't, by the way, I've been checked a lot, but,
yeah.
But I definitely wasn't doing my body any good. I wasn't doing anything to prevent getting cancer.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, I've become like a little bit of a zealot about it and the health issues that it is. And I think it's like kind of a mental way for me to keep not drinking.
Yes.
But yeah, it's ethanol. It's what runs your car. Yeah. Like it's literally what causes what they put in your engine. Like it's not good for you.
It's not. There's no benefit to it in the slightest. And gosh, it puts beyond the health benefits. It puts you in positions of, you know, more dangerous situations and all kinds of other negative things.
Yeah. Just
all around it.
Yeah. And I've drank for every reason there is to drink, for fun, for numbing, you know, for every reason that there is, I have done it. And what I can say is that all of those things, fun, grief, all still exist outside of it.
Yeah.
And I promise they feel better. Everything is heightened in every way when you're not numbing it, because even though drinking at a party or at a football game is fun, you're actually like numbing yourself to the fun that's around you.
Yeah.
It's a numbing agent all the way around. So it's numbing out the good and the bad. But it's also not easy to quit. It's really hard.
Well, and one thing, as you were kind of telling the progression and the timeline to where you are now, I hope that anybody listening picked up on that. You know, you kept trying, even though it didn't lead to those first initial times weren't adding to your 1,000 streak that you're at right now. You know, there were those stints in between and you kept trying. And even though it wasn't fully putting you on in the situation you wanted to be on the first try. And so I tell people that all the time, like anything is better than nothing. Any little bit that you can try and work towards is going to be beneficial, even if it's not causing your like goal result. And so I think that's super inspiring, really, that.
Yeah. I think that
you just kept going.
Yeah. My situation is more than norm. You know, I have friends who stopped and that they were done. But most of the people I know who have gotten sober have done at least one dry January, at least one like sober October, or just like taking a break. And then you do start to see the benefits. And that's where it starts to like cause your mental shift, is that, you know, when you take 100 days off of a substance that your body is used to, and you start to see the benefits, when you start taking that substance again, you don't forget that there were benefits there.
Yeah.
And so like it starts to nag at you a little bit. Like, you know, it could be better. You know,
yeah.
You know that you could be doing something that would make you feel better, sleep better, happier, all the things.
Wow. So my last question for you regarding, I say last question, it probably won't be, it'll probably come up later, but like, for anyone that is, I've seen the term on TikTok a lot, the like sober curious, maybe, or people are having that feeling that they need to be doing something different, and that they need to cut alcohol out of their life. Is there anything, any one thing you wish they knew that could help them be successful from your experience? That's a hard question.
It's a hard question. There's so many things. I would say all the things that you fear about quitting drinking are true. People are going to stop hanging out with you as much. Because you're not doing something is going to put a microscope on what they're doing.
Mm.
And it's not your fault. That's not your fault. You can have fun. I promise you can still have fun without drinking. It does look different. It does feel different. It is really hard, but it gets easier. It just gets easier every day. And I would say always have your toolbox ready, whatever that looks like for you. For me, it is, I don't go anywhere without a coffee and a soda water. Like,
yeah.
And also, like, and probably my book. Because if I need to like disassociate from the situation, I'm probably going to go read.
I love that. Yes.
Sometimes you have to, like, it's just, yeah, when everybody around you is drinking, it just is, it's a lot to deal with. Also, yeah, I'll say this, when everybody is around you is drinking and they're starting to get drunk, you're going to be so excited that you're driving yourself home, that you're going to, yeah, feel fine tomorrow. You're not going to have any regrets. You're going to sleep great. You're going to wake up not sick or feeling gross.
No anxiety the next morning. No way.
You're going to be, yes, so well rested. That's what, yeah, I say it all the time. Yes. I'm about to be so well rested.
Yes. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I would just say, like, yeah, it's really hard. It's also so, so worth it. And mm-hmm, I think the one thing that, and I kind of touched on this earlier, it doesn't have to be a problem for anybody else. There are going to be people who are going to say, but it doesn't seem like you have a problem. We all drink like that. We all drink every day. Or, you know, even if you have one drink a day, it doesn't have to be a problem for anybody but you. If, yeah, you feel like it's a problem, if you are uncomfortable with how much you drink or why you drink or when you drink or that you drink at all, that's all that matters.
There's no certain level you need to be at.
You don't have to be losing your job. Yes. To think that you have a problem. If you're concerned, mm-hmm, about long-term health benefits and that one drink a day causes that like little nagging sense in the back of your mind, that's a problem for you.
Yeah.
Only has, yep, to be problematic for you.
Oh, I love that. So in the midst of all of this, I know that you were also, as you were going through this, you were also struggling with chronic pain. And that is a huge contributor that I have seen through the years of any type of substance use, literally any type, whether it be from, you know, an NSAID, a small, you know, something like that, to an opioid, to alcohol. And so I think that also speaks volumes of how strong you were in dedicating that as you were also struggling with chronic pain. Do you mind telling us kind of a little bit of your history with that?
Sure. So I don't think I ever put the alcohol use and chronic pain together until we met. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I was sober when we met. Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
I had already joined,
yes,
the CEO, so I was sober when we met, but very freshly sober. Mm-hmm. So I had not put the two and two together, but I bet they, somewhere along the way, it certainly probably contributed. So I was talking to Mike, that's my husband, earlier about how long I've been working out, and he said, since I met you. So 17 mm-hmm. years I've been working out on and off, kind of just like, you know, always for weight loss, by the way. We'll get to why that's its own problem. Mm-hmm. But about 10 years ago, I started running. I also worked a very physical job. I was a warehouse manager. So I worked a very physical job somewhere in there between running and, you know, probably lifting things so wrong. I herniated two discs in my back.
Mm-hmm.
Before I was diagnosed, I went probably 6 or 7 months of just having like really severe back pain and just working through it, working out through it, being called lazy, but so many things, being called lazy by a trainer. It was awful. Mm. And then finally I got some MRIs done, and I think they sent, you know, I went to physical therapy. They put me on lots of pain meds. But it never went away. Like it never, like it would kind of
come. Never resolved.
Never resolved. Never. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I ran through it. I worked through it. I had a baby through it.
Mm-hmm.
I just did all the things living with chronic pain. And it definitely like wore me down, you know, like, because I always, it, when you can't see somebody's pain,
oh yeah,
you can't see an open wound, there are people around you who will look at you like you're making it up.
Oh yeah.
And sometimes in your own mind, you will think, am I making this up? Mm-hmm. Like, it's insane how it, like, how it feels, but because you know that you're in pain, then you're like, all right, am I in pain? Am I, is this mental? It was not, by the way.
Not at all.
Not at all. It was not mental at all. It was real pain. I do think there was a emotional aspect to it, but it was definitely real pain, and it was debilitating at times. I mean, absolutely. Yes. Especially at points in my cycle, it would be so bad. I had lost, I really, really love to run, and I had lost the ability to do that completely by the time you and I met.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, I would do it, and then I would be in so much pain for the next 2 weeks that I just couldn't do it again.
Yeah.
So I had been in physical therapy multiple times, not with you, with other physical therapists. I had done, we had thrown so many things at it. Needles, exercise, those machines that like pull you apart, and like, just so many things.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of, I refused to take any like strong medication, which is funny because I, you know, I drank, but clearly I had addiction issues and I knew that. So I was like, I'm not going to take these strong opioids. Because I, you know, I get it. I get why people get addicted to pain medication because it, being in chronic pain, makes you feel like a crazy person.
Yes.
And so like living without that pain is euphoric.
Mm-hmm.
After you've been in pain for so long and then suddenly it's not there, it is euphoric. Mm-hmm. And you will
keep such a relief. Yeah.
You will keep going for that. And, you know, when an opioid gives that to you, you know, after issues of chronic pain, I have nothing but empathy for people when they've lived with chronic pain and then they get addicted to pain meds because,
yes,
like, nothing but empathy. You'll get no judgment from me there. It's awful.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I had chronic pain. I joined the studio and it was helping. Uh-huh. It was really helping my back. I also, in that time, quit my job, my very physical job, and started working an incredible job, but was also work from home, which meant I sat a lot.
Yeah.
Which kind of didn't help. It kind of like was a whole new era of different pain. My pain traveled into my hips and things.
Yes.
So I had to find, you know, like a good balance. The studio was really great for me in that it wasn't hurting my back, but it wasn't healing it either.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, I was able to like work out and feel, you know, like I was getting something done. And then walking has always been really good. So after I joined the studio, I was around, I guess you and I met the first time I was pregnant. Is that right?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. So mm-hmm. I had been following the studio online and seeing all of your stuff. And I got pregnant with my second baby in February of 2022. Mm-hmm. And immediately called Belle. I knew that she was a pelvic floor therapist. And I had had a really, really terrible recovery from my first baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew that I wanted to like that. And also, like, I think you had posted something on Instagram that was like 4 signs of that you need pelvic floor health. And I had all 4 of them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this, the whole time I was like, no, it's fine. Everybody pees a little when they laugh. It's fine. They don't, by the way.
They don't.
Yeah. And it was like all these things that I just had never attributed to what I had like giving birth or even pelvic floor health. And then also it was like my back. One of the things was like lower back pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so my hips and my back were really, really terrible when I got pregnant. They were awful with my second one. So we met and we started doing pelvic floor therapy together. And then I had a baby. And then we just kept on. But we still do some pelvic floor stuff when things get aggravated. But we started to focus on my back.
Yeah.
And it worked.
And here you are.
And here I am. I run again, pain-free, which is pretty amazing. Yeah, it's been, this is the longest I've gone without back pain in over a decade.
Oh, I could bring tears to my eyes.
I know. That's why, I'm president of the Bell Moody fan club.
Oh my gosh. I remember when, and I can edit this out if you want me to, but I remember one appointment with you, and this was before I was working on my own, and you said you started talking about your back, and we had the kind of like, sorry, Moose sees the garage man. One moment. You had said, we had touched on your back a little bit, like when I had first was getting information from you, but, you know, primary focus was your pregnancy and the pelvic health aspect. And then I just remember, maybe it was a couple appointments later, and I think we started talking about your back more, and I just remember feeling so, I don't know, optimistic at the future of what things could look like, especially after your pregnancy, for you with your back, and hearing your story of how many years, I think at that point you said it had been like 8 years, of pain that wasn't, you know, and it would get, I know you mentioned you've never said anything bad about your previous PTs or anything, like it would get slightly better, but it was just never totally, totally gone. And so I just am, I'm so thankful today to, yeah, like when you text me and say you go on a run, I could just literally like each time I could cry when
me
I
too.
Hear it.
Because, me too. I don't have anything bad to say about my previous PTs. I think that they did what they believed was right. I think that
they
tried really hard, and they really did. Time, I thought that, well, they've thrown the book at it. They've done everything they can do.
Yeah.
I think that you took a much simpler approach. Simpler is not the right word. I think that previously there had been a lot of band-aids applied.
Yeah.
To my issue. I think needling always worked for a short time. And I think that's kind of what it's meant to do.
Yeah. Yes. It worked
in, you know, in conjunction with whatever steroid pack I was put on at the time, because I was having a bad, you know, it was a really bad flare. It would work for a short amount of time, and I would have, but I would never have, I was never pain free, mm-hmm, ever. Mm-hmm. I would never have days where I would look at Mike and be like, my back doesn't hurt at all. You know, like,
yeah.
And it's crazy now, because we do have those days where I will literally look at Mike and say, I don't have any back pain. Like, it doesn't hurt at all. And it's wild to me, because when you get so used to it, like, it'll shock me sometimes that I'm getting up out of a chair, or
you getting up and down off the floor.
Just up and down off the floor. It's, yeah, such a wild difference.
Oh my gosh. And like, when I see you now, like even you getting on like the table, you know, like getting up, yeah, and down off the table, is the difference is crazy. And you know, like even recently, I mean, I was seeing you frequently for a while, mm-hmm, and then but then we started to taper, and I mean, a lot of this was just you following through outside even when I wasn't seeing you, you know what I mean, like your, yeah, dedication to doing all of the things. And I mean, you've really healed yourself, and I think I just gave you a roadmap to it, and it wasn't quick. It was not quick.
No.
But, yeah.
Well, and nobody had ever given me a roadmap. I think that I'd always been given Band-Aids, but there had never been, and no one had ever said, this is going to take time. Like, yeah, it's going to take time to deal with this. And, but I think one thing that, you know, you can say that I definitely did all the work outside of you, but you were also the first person who never told me to lose weight,
mm-hmm,
who said, you're healing your mental issues, like dealing with your mental wellness is going to affect your physical wellness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like nobody had ever kind of forced me to do those at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like really where I like focus a lot of my energy is getting to a point where my mental health, like I needed to strengthen my mental health and my body at the same time.
Yes.
And like working on those things, the roads have converged, you know, like it's been, that's been the biggest shift. And I've seen obviously, you know, a huge shift in my back pain. And I've seen you a little bit more recently for other things, cause I'm 42 and I have two kids and my body is, sometimes it gets sore. So
things happen. Yes.
Yeah. It just happens. And like I had like a random shoulder injury. I don't know why. And so now I just like to say, I tell people I see Belle just for like general maintenance. Okay. It's like getting your oil changed with you when you have a car. I'm just like, hey, do you have an appointment so I can get my oil changed?
Oh my gosh. You talking about losing weight, I think I remember there was one day I was at your house and you asked me if the missing piece, and this was pretty early on, you know, so we're still, and especially in those early days,
I'd had a baby at this point.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And it was like things would, and I try and tell everybody that as you start on your, journey, I guess is the best word I can use. As you start on your journey towards healing and feeling better, and especially when it comes to chronic pain, if that's a part of your story, when you start, it is not going to be a step by step by step by step upwards. A lot of times it is like an up and then we go down and then we really go up and then you can get really encouraged and excited and then boom, it's going to drop back down again. And then, you know, it's this kind of like, it's not a linear progression at all. And so I know at this point we weren't like making it, we hadn't gone super, super up to where we needed to be eventually, but I knew that, and we had been talking about that was going to be the path. And I remember you asking me if the missing piece was losing weight, and I still think, or I think about that, and I'm like, I wonder how many times she's been told that was the problem, you know. And
I've been told that every time.
Oh my gosh.
And in those 10, it's not like I was the size I am now 10 years ago. I've had two babies since then. Like my body looks wildly different today than it did a decade ago when this pain started. And I was told that then.
Oh, and yeah. So many times, like, so many times people are given that as the resolution, and it's, when it's really not, you're a very healthy woman. You're a really great size. You have great like muscle mass. And that's something that I know is one of your goals that you work towards, frequently. And okay. So here's a question, as you started at the studio, because you had been, I mean, exercise had been a part of your life forever. It was not something new that you were implementing. It was just a new form of exercise that you were starting to do. Did you feel the shift? Did that contribute to the shift in your mindset towards exercise when you started at the studio, or kind of like, what did that progression look like for you? Because, I know just over the years, even mine has changed. I feel like me and Johnette have talked about this. I feel like ours has even changed like year by year. It just gets better and better in the way that we view exercise.
For sure. Yeah. I think that, like I was saying earlier, talking to Mike, 'cause I was trying to figure out before this, like, how long have I been doing this, and on and off working out for, you know, 15, 17 years, something like that, at least 17 years, on and off working out, always for the purpose of weight loss, never for any other reason. Mm-hmm. It was always like I had put on a little weight. I felt a little bit bigger, for whatever reason. So I started working out. And it kind of came and went. I got a trainer at one point. That was like probably 10 or 11 years ago. And again, always, I remember the first meeting with my trainer, one of the first questions she asked was, what are you doing for weight loss right now? So yeah, it had always been like there for that purpose. I had stopped at some point. I started, probably during the like body positivity movement, I started doing more research on like, what does body mass index even mean? How is it created? P.S. look that up because
it's terrible.
And the fact that we're constantly, you know, looking at that,
the fact that we're using it in
ridiculous
in as like an insurance marker on like your rates of insurance and stuff like that is despicable.
It is
to me. Yes.
Yeah. And like, also like I majored in women's studies in college. It was not news to me that I was comparing my body to an unrealistic standard of beauty that I would never meet. You know, like I was never going to be these over edited versions of what a woman's body looked like. Mm-hmm. So the more I started to like look into like what that was, the more I had like, I started to have a shift in why I wanted to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things was like trying to deal with, I have a very high anxiety. That's what I've dealt with my entire life is really crippling anxiety. Another thing is like, no doctor had ever said to me at any point, I'm 42 years old, up until my late 30s, no one had ever said to me, have you thought about working out to help your mental health?
Yeah.
Ever. So it had always been prescriptions. Give her a pill for every ill, you know, like it's give her something for the pain, give her something for the mental pain. Never any like realistic lifelong advice for how to deal with this. So mm-hmm. That was kind of like a big shift. But also like the going to the gym was giving me anxiety. Like mm-hmm. I was at that point, it was like, well, I'm going here and I feel like my body doesn't match the bodies that you see when you think about working out. And so I was going to the gym to help my anxiety. And I was having anxiety walking in the door. So Megan, studio director Megan, really pushed me to join the studio in a very gentle way.
Mm-hmm.
She's about as social as I am. So the fact that she was taking group classes spoke a lot to the studio's kind of overall feeling, mm-hmm. because neither one of us are like, I would say, group workout people. We're not really like, you know, social girls. I don't think anybody, nobody's going to be like, man, Nikki and Megan, they're so friendly. Nobody. And so the fact that she, and P.S., I adore Megan. So the fact that Megan was like really encouraging me, she was also, Megan has been, my sober buddy through all of this. Like, she has been hugely supportive of my sober life and
amazing.
She's one of the first people I texted when I, in the first time I tried, cause I knew that she had also quit drinking and for her very own reasons.
Yeah.
And she has just been such a huge supporter. She was also the first person to ever say to me, like when I fell off the wagon or whatever, she would be like, okay, so last month you didn't drink and today you do drink and tomorrow you might not drink. It doesn't have to be all or nothing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so like that was so big for me. And so from that moment on, it was like, I just trusted Megan. And so she encouraged me to go to the studio and I did. And I really liked it. I really liked that there were modifications and that people were taking them around me. And it did not feel like we were all competing against one another to see who was taking the fewest, who was doing the most. Mm-hmm. It just never has felt like that. It's such a, like, community is the best word that I have for it because that's how it feels. Like, I'm not a social girl, but when I don't have the studio, like, I miss that. Like, yeah. After I had Dottie, it was like 4 weeks. And after you give birth, it can be kind of a lonely experience anyway, but I really missed that community feeling. Mm-hmm. And there are days when I go to the studio and I don't say a word to anybody. Like, I walk in, I work out, I leave.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important for me to go there. And then, like, I think as it's over time, over the last 3 years, I would say that you guys have had a huge shift. Not really so much, like, it's always been there, like, that feeling of, like, working out for wellness and working out for, you know, for the right reasons.
Yeah.
But really started to, like, verbalize it and, like, push it, you know, on social media. And I think that that's really important. Mm-hmm. You know, like, one thing that I have taken is, like, not, I don't ever say, you know, like, I want to lose weight or be thin. Like, I always refer to as body composition, because that makes the most sense.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes.
And I've taken that into my kids too. Like, that's how we talk about the shape and size of bodies. We talk about body composition.
Yes.
So yeah, I would say, obviously I love the studio. And it comes and goes with me. Like, there, if you looked at my records, you would see that, like, a couple of months ago, I didn't go for like a month.
Yeah.
Because life just got in the way. Like, work was really busy and I just couldn't, I could never make it in. But now I'm back to going regularly and it's all fine. Yes. There's absolutely zero judgment when you come back.
Gosh, ever. That's something. Yes. Because, you know, we understand, gosh, people are in all kinds of different situations and seasons of their life. And so we also don't want it to feel like, I know sometimes at other places and other things, it's like, you know, if you're not there, it is, you should feel guilty, you know, you should feel really. And so I just want, I'm so glad that you feel comfortable too. And you feel that from us too, because that, you know, if you need to step away, gosh, the stress that it could put on you trying to be there versus just doing what you need to do for your family and for your life is not going to benefit anybody. You know what I mean? Right. If you're so stressing out, trying to keep up with being there 3-5 times a week or whatever. So, I would say in the past, like you said, 2-3 years, we really, just saw, I don't want to say the full truth of exercise, because I know there's so much that, like, we can learn more, and that's what me and Johnette try to do. Miss, we're not going to cry right now. But I just feel like we've really seen it for what it is. And, in college, my major was kinesiology. And, like, I took a class, exercise and weight control, and it was all about, BMI, the weight loss on a scale, what's the right way to do it, what's the wrong way to do it. And so I just feel like, gosh, we're really cutting exercise short if that's the only thing we're looking at. And why do it transforms your view of things when you think about what it's adding to your life versus what it's doing to take away. And so, like, from a body composition standpoint, okay, if that's a goal of yours that you want to change it in some way, rather than thinking of, let's see how much fat we can decrease, why don't we focus on building your muscle mass instead? And because that has way more benefits than focusing on losing the fat, if we, you know what I mean? Like, I know you and me have talked about, from a nutrition standpoint, how much fun is it to try and see how much protein you can add in that versus how many calories you can take away throughout the day? You know, that just makes it transforms the way you see all kinds of things. So I think, I'm very just, I'm so pleased to hear that, you know, you felt that as well. And that Archie, and that I'm also so thankful for your group of friends who are so supportive, and Megan for encouraging you to be here to begin with. I don't know what I'd do without knowing you, you know?
He's so sad. It's,
oh my gosh.
My little sober group is all there. We all go to bar, and it's, you know, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
It's been such a joy in my life.
Well, I am so thankful to I'm so thankful to know you and gosh, and I love just, I could talk to you for hours. I think we could solve the world's.
So every time I come for an appointment, I'm like, why does she book somebody right after me? 'Cause we're going to have like 30 more minutes of talking.
Oh my gosh. But I mean, seriously, we could just, if only everybody asked us, you know, and we could give them the right way to go. So
I keep telling them, let me tell you how to fix it.
Well, is there anything else that you want to add if somebody's listening to this from like, if they've been in any similar shoes as you, whether it be from the chronic pain standpoint, anxiety with exercise or, sobriety, is there anything you wish somebody would know? That's such a broad question. It's another, but anything that I didn't ask you about that you want somebody to take away from hearing your story?
I think it is a broad question, but they're also interrelated. For me, they were also interrelated.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an open book. I say that all the time. Like, I will just tell you, I don't really have a lot of secrets. I'm very open about all these things. And I would just encourage anybody to also be open, reach out to somebody that is also sober or is going through it, you know, or has done it. That was such a huge, you know, like I've brought up Megan multiple times. Megan has been a huge shift for me. You know, she was who I texted when I decided to get sober. She is who got me into the studio and just having that support. And so, you know, have a support system for all of it. Get a village.
Yes.
Get a village. The most important thing.
I agree.
And also, if you have chronic back pain, she didn't ask me to say this, but if you live with chronic back pain, Belle is your girl. Not right now, because she's about to have a baby, but in a couple of months, Belle is your girl. She will fix you right up.
Oh, you're the best.
I leaned into the phone like it was a microphone when I said that, because I mean.
Oh, I love it. Gosh, Nikki, thank you so much for taking the time to do this and sharing. I'll say this too about you talking about being open about things. It is so freeing when you can when you let go of expecting or what people are going to think about, you know, what you're going through or different things like that, and have people that you can share with. And so I just wanted to. Archie, did you hear that? I just wanted to kind of like emphasize that I think that has like really great benefits as well, being open about stuff you're going through and making sure you're not suffering through it alone.
There's no way that you're the only one suffering through it. There's no way.
No way. No way.
There's a lot of folks in the world, and we're all doing the best we can.
Yes. But I just thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I know that it helped somebody listening for sure, and you know, might have been the spark to get them started towards whether it be sobriety or maybe changing the way that they exercise. And I will be grateful forever. I'm also grateful for your kind words about me.
Well, they're true.
So thank y'all so much for listening, and make sure to share this with a friend. And you can subscribe to the podcast, because we will be back next week with another episode. Thank you so much, Nikki.
Thank you, Belle. I love you so much.
I love you too. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. You can meet us and work out with us in person at the Studio Bar and Wellness located in Starkville and Louisville, Mississippi, or move with us online at www.thestudiobarandwellness.com on Studio Stream. Our goal is that you move well to live well.